You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Is the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast all about Nottingham Forest. On this episode, deadline day roundup, Matt Sells and Mad Sales, Reds get a pain in the arsenal, we'll discuss the need for some Cherries aid on the coast this weekend, and talk funny Forest names. Missing Brees Samba, Kaylor Navas, Dean Henderson, and even Taled Al-Rashidi more and more every day. This is the Garibaldi Gazette. Phew, that was a close one, wasn't it? We almost ended up with a Tubarak bomb at the last minute. But the transfer deadline has passed and Forest have done plenty of business. That's why we're a little late this week, because we wanted to talk about it conclusively with you, listener. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined, as ever, by two of my favourite Forest folk. Hello, Asher Ali.
Hello, everyone. Let's talk Forest. I love Forest.
Yeah, it's been another smooth week at the world-famous City Ground. Nick Miller's back with us too. You okay, Nick?
Yeah, not bad. Can I start off with a bit of a confession? And this is a sort of a confession combined with a test to see if my dad actually listens to this, because he'll be straight on the phone with this one. I was on a work trip this week, and I'm afraid to say that I had a very pleasant conversation, shook hands with, even exchanged phone numbers with for a more formal conversation at a later date, with a director from Anderlecht. And I didn't spit on his shoes.
Damn.
So I just wanted to, you know, before it got out there, before I was a bit exposed by, you know, someone else, I just wanted to say I'm sorry that I've let everyone down.
Yeah, I mean, you have let everyone down. Maybe the younger listeners won't be up to speed with this, but basically Anderlecht bribed the ref in the UEFA Cup semi-final.
1984 UEFA Cup semi-final, yeah.
Yeah, Forest would have gone through to the final, but for that dodgy fella. So thanks, Anderlecht. Well, that makes me feel better, because I've got an apology to issue as well. And this one's going to go to my mum, but mainly to you two, because I did something pretty unforgivable at the world-famous City Ground on Tuesday night. So I went with mum, but we were sat in separate areas, as is often the way these days, can't get tickets together. And she texted me at 2-0 down on 87 minutes and said, shall we just go? It's quite cold and we're not playing very well. And I said, you know what? Maybe on this one occasion, mum, we will. So I headed down the stairs, went to the toilet before I left, heard a roar. Somebody said, oh, we've scored. So I ran back up to my seat, left mum waiting at the burger van, which didn't have any tea left, which is all she wanted, whilst I watched the game play out. Asher, you look upset. Two big revelations you've just been hit with it not long after 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. Can we carry on with the podcast?
I don't know which one I'm more upset about. They're both unforgivable on so many levels. Mm. I, on the other hand, have nothing to apologise about.
Good. We need someone morally pure on the pod, just to kind of balance the twin disgraces out, really.
Yeah, I stayed till the end of the 8-1 against Man United as well. I don't know what I was thinking. Very, very poor. Anyway, I hope you can forgive us, listener, and stick with us. We're going to start with transfer deadline day, which is a little bit confusing because, you know, Turkish window and all that. But we'll round it up what we know so far. Gio Reyna in on loan. We spoke about this one last week. No option to buy. Asha, where's he going to play? Because we've just put Morgan Gibbs-White back in the 10 role, and this kid presumably hasn't come to sit on the bench. So is he going to be rotating with Gibbs-White? Is Gibbs-White getting shunted again, or is Reyna going to play on the wing?
I think first off, it's probably worth just noting just how restrained this window has been, actually. It's been a bit weird, isn't it? Usually we're the sort of national joke, and usually when it comes to shopping, you know, we show the kind of restraint that like a peak Michael Jackson would in Harrods. Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that? It's a chimp, Michael. Yeah, I want it. No, we have 32 chimps already, Michael. I don't care, buy it. That's usually how these things
It's an incredible impression. We just got to dwell on that for a moment.
It is. It is an incredible impression. I once stayed in a hotel when I was very young in Orlando, Florida, and this hotel had two floors of the thing booked out. One of them was for Michael Jackson. The other one was for his chimp, Bubbles the chimp. Allegedly. I mean, you know, that's who's going to sue me for that? I'm sure it's real.
I completely believe that.
Yeah.
I completely believe that. But back to Gio Reyna.
Sorry.
It's a great segue. The American Dream, as Erling Haaland called him in their time together. They actually, like, I went back and I watched a lot of footage because obviously, you know of guys like that, you know, when you play Football Manager or whatever, you know, you sort of know, you're aware of these wonder kids, but you don't, you know, if they're not sort of in front of you, you don't really know exactly what they're about. So I went and watched some stuff, and his link up with Haaland was actually quite exciting. And if you watch that footage, you sort of see where he plays and where he just sort of feels like he's best. And unfortunately, those positions are the same kind of positions that Morgan Gibbs-White takes up. So that is a bit of a sort of like red flag. And also he describes himself. There's loads of pieces in The Athletic this week. And, you know, there's loads of quotes from him. And he describes himself as, you know, I play best in a free role, you know, when I'm sort of given free rein. So that is sort of a bit of a kind of like, oh, how does he fit in? Because from all accounts, he's not an out and out winger. He's got no pace. You know, he definitely looks like one of those kind of half spacey type players. And we've already got one of those. So I think for us, like, yeah, it's, you know, in the kind of state we're in, getting a player like that in on loan is good. But then, you know, he's been injured a lot. He hasn't played much. He's played something like 300 minutes this whole season. So there's that as well. He sounds like a fiery character. And it sort of seems as if it's kind of a little bit of a reclamation project in terms of getting his confidence back up. But I think if we can sell him, you know, can you play alongside Morgan Gibbs-White, sort of, you know, slightly wider? You don't necessarily have to be that player who hugs the kind of touchline or whatever. If we can sell that to him and sort of get him up to speed quick, it could be exciting, but just him and Morgan Gibbs-White, I just don't know how that's going to work right now.
I guess, Nick, the benefit of it being a straight loan rather than with an obligation is, although I'm assuming there might be some financial penalties if he doesn't play much, that there's not going to be that same need to play him to kind of persuade him that, you know, this is the place for you to be long term. If it's him or Gibbs-White and Gibbs-White's playing better, then that makes that decision a bit easier.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the penalties might be him whinging about not playing because he's, as you say, he's not coming to sit on the bench. He's got the Copa America in the summer, and it's a Copa America hosted in the USA, slightly implausibly. So, you know, that's why he's here, because he's been sitting on the bench at Dortmund. He wants some semblance of some game time. I mean, yeah, looking at it from a kind of positive perspective, those games that Gibbs-White has not been there. And by not been there, I mean not in the team and also on the left wing or, you know, on the right wing, wherever it was he was playing under Cooper. There is just this kind of huge hole, both literally and figuratively, in the middle where there's no one creative. You've just got this kind of collection of pretty good ball-winning midfielders and then no one to really do anything with it. So from that perspective, someone else to do that, if they can figure out a way for, you know, Reyna and Gibbs-White to dovetail. I mean, it's not particularly Nuno, but if there was some kind of, you know, fluid forward line behind, you know, a 1 year / Wood, Gibbs-White, Reyna, some combination of Elanga and Hudson-Odoi, then that's potentially pretty sexy. But, you know, maybe they'll have to operate some kind of Jedi mind trick by saying, yeah, you know, you can play where you want as long as it's in this like 20 yards between the touchline, the you know, left touchline and, you know, middle of the penalty area or whatever. So yeah, it's one of those things where your first instinct is to go, oh yeah, then no, that makes sense. We need like a dynamic attacker who can play wide and a bit of creativity and some cover for Gibbs-White. But then you think about it a little bit more and you think, is this just because his agent is Jorge Mendes? And, you know, it's possible for those two things to exist at the same time. But it's one of those, in theory, good, but in practice, not so sure.
Well, is it just because his agent is Jorge Mendes? Leads me nicely on to Rodrigo Ribeiro, which is not a Football Manager regen name. He is apparently a real person, another Uncle George special, this one, an option that could become an obligation. What a modern football phrase that is, by the way. Mainly plays for Sporting B in the third tier in Portugal. He's only made 6 league appearances for the first team. Nick, it's easy to be cynical, and please do, but if we're being optimistic, maybe he'll just Murillo the hell out of this.
Yeah, I mean, Murillo is one of those things where everything you knew before was wrong and all logic kind of goes out the window, given the, as you allude to, the lack of experience he had before he signed for Forest. I don't know if this is a good or a bad sign, but I was talking to a Portuguese journalist yesterday who, to be fair, mainly covers Porto, so Sporting aren't his kind of area of speciality. And he knew absolutely nothing about this kid. So I don't think that people are kind of wailing on the streets of Lisbon, clinging to this kid's ankles, saying, please stay. Why are you going? Why are you going there? Why are you abandoning us? But yeah, sorry, you were trying to be positive there for a second. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. And again, it's more, in theory, it's one of those kind of slightly risk or minimal risk signings, because it is only on loan. There's a possibility for it to be made permanent, but if he doesn't play or he's rubbish, then, you know, just send him back on his way. There's no particular pressure to actually play him in the team. He's not, you know, he's a forward, and when both of them are fit, we've got a couple of pretty good ones of those at the moment. So he will, I think, at best be an option. And hey, if he comes in and scores a couple of goals, then fantastic. But you know what? I caught myself there and said, you know, maybe this is some kind of example of logical thinking and, you know, joined up strategy or whatever. But then I remembered, and, you know, so who knows, really? I mean, it's just impossible. The thing is, it's a kind of, there have been a number of examples of this. Like Arsha was talking there about the restraint, and that's how it's kind of ended up, and that we've, Forest have signed two sort of senior players in positions that we needed someone else. But the two positions, I think we needed someone, which is fine. But it's just the kind of the stuff behind that, the what they were trying to do and what might have happened if everyone at the club had got their way by the end of the window, that's a little bit troubling. And this one sort of falls into that category a little bit. They can't reasonably expect this 18-year-old kid who's, as you say, played a handful of times in the third division to have seen a kind of have any immediate meaningful impact on this season. So you wonder how and why it happened. Our legal department probably wouldn't want us to speculate on that, but yeah, who knows?
Let's just say it makes sense to somebody somewhere. Now, I forgot to say that the best way that you can support this podcast is to give us a 5-star rating and some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. So that's Matt Sells, the pod. Arsha, what about Matt Sells, Belgian goalkeeper?
Oh, No, we're not blowing straight past that. Let's just take a moment for that.
Oh, you can't imagine how pleased I was when I thought of that.
It's, oh, I can. I really can.
That hurt. That actually hurt me.
And I knew that you two would hate it as well. And I thought, I'm still going to use it because...
well, I presume that's why you did it.
The person I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a large part of it. So he's a Belgian goalkeeper, Arsha. He's coming in on a 3.5-year deal from Strasbourg. I don't want us to just be all horrible and cynical, but I'm not really feeling this one, I've got to say. Why would Strasbourg want to sell their first choice keeper in the middle of the season?
And their captain as well. I don't know. I mean, I don't just want to immediately shoot him down because I'm kind of bored of that myself, because it just always actually happens. You know, you come on here and you're like, oh, you know, he's going to be rubbish, and then he is rubbish. So I don't know if that's some kind of weird universe manifesting transfer thing. I don't know. Red flag for me is this Newcastle spell that he had. Yes, you know, it was a long time ago. But if you can't sort of handle the hustle and bustle of the Championship, I think it's going to be difficult to adapt to the Premier League. But, you know, as we say, that was quite a while ago. Newcastle fans were quite brutal about him. And when they're sort of clamoring to get Carl Darlow back in goal, you know something's up. Sorry, Carl. If you look at the list as well, and the list that was sort of leaked, I don't know, and sort of made, you know, quite public, it is quite a climb down, you know, to sort of be linked with Sam Johnson and, you know, I mean, loosely, David De Gea and Rui Silva and whoever else was on that huge list of people that, you know, we sort of, you know, tried to make doe eyes to, and they're just like, nah, mate, we're not having that. So, yeah, I mean, if you watch his YouTube video, which is what we've all done, yeah, you know, he looks like he can sort of save a ball, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he's obviously going to walk in because Police Academy in goal at the moment, Matt Turner, he just no, just stop. Blackadimos, no, stop. So I feel like he's going to walk in. So we're going to see him pretty soon and we're going to sort of see what comedy movie we could name him after. And probably not. No, hopefully he's great. Hopefully he's great.
He is a Belgium international, Nick. You know, he's been playing regularly all season, but a Forest gone for him on the cheap, £5-6 million seems to be around the fee because they couldn't get away with spending 15 million on Johnston or Kelleher, or is it just because those two players didn't want to come?
Johnston, I think, is, I mean, Kelleher, I have no idea. I imagine he's, I mean, he seems kind of, at the age he is, relatively happy with being Alisson's understudy and playing a few cup games here and there. Johnston, I think, by the sounds of it, was slightly more willing to come because he's out of the Crystal Palace team and wants to get into the England squad for the Euros. So, I don't know. This is one of those things, like, kind of repeat of the what I was saying before, is that the final kind of end point of this might be all right. I think he seems a perfectly kind of solid, serviceable, in baseball they call it replacement level player, which is just basically you're out completely average, not going to do anything particularly wrong, not going to do anything in particular right, which is fine. And as Arshi says, probably an upgrade on what we have already. I've kind of very firmly reached, I just feel sorry for him stage with Matt Turner now, because he's just, you know, but again, it's the sort of process behind it that is concerning. I think I've made it, I did, as Arshi alluded to, I've made a list of, I think, all the goalkeepers that, according to some, you know, fairly reliable journalists with better context than me, that Forrest did try and sign, or at least, you know, asked about or tried to see if they'd be interested. And the list I've got is David De Gea, Kevin Kelleher, Rui Silva, Aaron Ramsdale, Matt Sells, who came in, Sam Johnson, Marco Bizzo, who I'm not familiar with, Cohen Castiles, Jack Butlin, Kasper Schmeichel, Peter Galashi, and Alvaro Valles, who, again, I'm not entirely familiar with. But it's just, not only is this a sort of confused process, but it's also something that you can trace. It's a sort of symbol of the chaotic way that things are done, and that you can trace back to basically allowing Bree Samba to leave for the sake of 5-10 grand a week or whatever it was that they were kind of arguing over with his agent. And, you know, there is a lot of, I think there's a lot of rose-tinted spectacle stuff about Samba, mainly because of the last thing we remember of him really is the playoff semi-final. But, you know, he was brilliant for us, but he was also capable of doing things like punching an opposition player in the head for no reason. And that was, you know, one of the reasons that we loved him, but doesn't necessarily make him a reliable Premier League goalkeeper. But it all sort of stems back from that. If Samba had stayed, then we might not have had to kind of draft in Keylor Navas in the second half of last season at great expense. And then having two main goalkeepers last season as loanees, that wouldn't have meant that we had to kind of panic and buy what are essentially two second choice goalkeepers in the summer and spend, you know, however much it was, 17, 18 million pounds on those two, which then turned out to be an error, which you had to fix by bringing in this guy for 5 million quid or whatever it is. All of them on, I think, on the same kind of contracts, three, I think they all now run, their contracts all run until the same time, which is pretty silly, really, that Forest potentially now have three second choice goalkeepers that are going to be quite difficult to shift in the summer. So, you know, if Sells comes in and is at least reassuring in the last few games, anyway, has been a central defence of a couple of kids who have been pretty good, but they're very inexperienced and could do with a reassuring kind of solid presence behind them. So if Sells comes in and gives them a little bit of reassurance and saves a few shots and, you know, doesn't kick it to the opposition every time he has the ball at his feet and doesn't inexplicably let it go through his legs from some kind of absurd angle, then great, we might be all right for the rest of the season. It's just then we're back in the same place in the summer, which is the confusing part and the frustrating part, and why we're talking about the thought process behind it. Because throughout this confused process, we might have ended up with a sort of reasonably competent keeper, but almost by accident rather than design.
There you go, Matt. The bar is low, but he's such a big bugger, he'll be able to touch it easily anyway. Let's have a look at some outgoings. This one makes me sad, Archer. It's Orel Mangala to Lyon. Poor old Orel. Thought he was going to Napoli. Instead, he ends up swapping one relegation battle for another. Only Morgan Gibbs-White has played more minutes in the Premier League this season than Orel Mangala. Our friend Paul Taylor saying the deal includes an initial fee of £10 million, a £20 million payment to make it permanent in the summer, potential further add-ons of £3 million and a 10% sell-on clause. I mean, if it ends up being 30 million, I guess you say that's pretty good money and they've made a profit on him, but that isn't guaranteed by the sounds of it. And, you know, Forest have used him regularly this season, so it's quite a piece to take out of the puzzle and just say, oh, well, maybe Ibrahim Sangare will hit some form.
It's that, you know, the guaranteed part, it not being guaranteed. That's the part that's worrying. You know, if we'd have sort of managed, I don't know why Lyon would suddenly have 30 million anyway to spend in a chunk. But if we, you know, if we'd have got that chunk, I would have felt slightly better about this. But yeah, Orel, man, pourquoi? Why? Why'd you leave? Why'd you leave for Lyon? But I mean, Nuno just didn't look like he fancied him though, really. If we're honest, like if you look at the, you know, the two wins that he's got, he wasn't there. You know, Mangala wasn't in that team. That's not, you know, it's not a particularly scientific kind of method, but it just didn't feel like he was his guy. I liked Mangala. I thought, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, he's responsible for this podcast.
I was going to say, have you got any stats to back that up, Bashir?
But he was just one of those players who kind of did everything. Like, he didn't do it to like elite levels, but he kind of did a bit of everything. Like, I looked at his stats this season and, you know, the one he was sort of highest in was interceptions, which you kind of go, yeah, he was that guy, wasn't he? He was able to kind of like, you know, intercept the ball and sort of play it off to someone else, you know, and just get things going. So a bit of a sort of all-round kind of master of none, but very useful. And like you say, you know, he clocked up a lot of minutes under Cooper. But yeah, this is definitely a kind of, right, all right, Sangare, time to step up, you know. And incidentally, Sangare, I looked at his stats over a year, and he can't intercept for Toffee. Like, he, every other defensive metric, he's like, you know, way up there. But interceptions, for some reason, he's not on there. And then you think, oh yeah, actually, I can see that now. He is quite clumsy, and he kind of just like, you know, kind of falls about the place and, you know, will nick the ball. But yeah, you're sort of hoping now, and like we talked about last week, like, you know, it did look like Nuno sort of figured out what to do with Sangare a little bit, you know, before he went off to AFCON. So hopefully Sangare comes back and steps into this Mangala shaped hole.
Nick, you going to miss him?
I am going to miss him, but I will be. I think I'll elect to be the sort of positive voice on that, having kind of whinged about the process before. This kind of, whether this was the plan or not, I don't know. But it sort of makes sense. The idea of, the thing people always say when teams come up from the Championship, or kind of, you know, smaller middling teams come up, is that you want to be like Brighton, basically. You want to have this kind of self-sustaining model where you buy players for cheap and then sell them on for 2-3 times the price, which is what Forest have kind of tried to do with players like Danilo and Murillo and whatever else. So this, from that perspective, signing a player for, what was it, 11 million, 10, 11 million pounds, something like that, and then 18 months later, him playing well and being sold on for 2-3 times the price, is exactly the way that you want a club to be run. Again, whether that was all the result of complete logical thinking, and we kind of, to a point, we know it wasn't, because we know the guy that signed Mangala was then sacked a few months later and then brought back on a consultancy basis. So there is obviously an element of chaos there. And it also makes kind of sense from a you know, if I was needed to raise some money this January, and, you know, with all the profit and sustainability issues, then it makes sense. Then selling someone in a position where Forest are already pretty well stocked makes sense again. I will miss him, and he was arguably the best player for the first, for the kind of Cooper part of this season. But if someone kind of offers a fair chunk of money, even though it is not 100% guaranteed, for a player that we already have, Yates and Dominguez and Sangare and even Coyote, who people kind of forget about, but I quite like, then fine. You know, it's not ideal, but when you're in a position like Forest are, particularly in a market where nobody is spending any money, then this feels like, from a kind of cold and logical point of view, a pretty good deal.
All right, we'll take it then. Joe Worrell didn't go to Sheffield United in the end. That one fell through. He might still go to Turkey, I guess, but he feels like he's just always going to be around at Forest. Scott McKenna has departed, though. He's joined Copenhagen on loan. What a lovely old job that is for him. Go and live in Copenhagen for a little bit. We ought to give him some thanks, Arsha, for his contributions over the last few years. One of those players who was so important in the promotion season, but got to the Premier League and it just looked a little bit much for him. But a valuable contribution he made during his time at Forest.
Yeah, let's not forget, he was player of the season. Like, people have short memories. I've seen a lot of like, yeah, you know, good riddance or whatever. You know. He was player of the season and he fully deserved it. And that was like in a team where you had loads of other candidates as well. You know, you could have gone for Spence, you could have gone for Samba, you could have gone for Graben, Jimmy Garner, you could have gone for anyone. But he really did stick out and he was a hero of that promotion run. I mean, he's completely made of granite. I think so. I think he was just sort of like forged and sort of, you know, like cut from granite. I don't know. I'm not a stone person. But, you know, he was so important. He was, wasn't he? A lot, because he sort of provided that balance. Like, that was a great unit. You know, it was Worrell, Cook and him and McKenna on the left, you know, and that kind of balance, like, you know, I think a lot of managers would be so happy with. You kind of crave that kind of balance, and it really kind of showed and, you know, paid off. But, and also I thought he was a lot better on the ball than most people gave him credit for. You know, and in the air, there's no one better in the championship. Like, he was ridiculous in the air. Like, you could not beat him. And I remember that game against Derby. Was that the last time we played against Derby, that 2-1?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Derby County, remember them. You know, he was great. He was great in that game. He was all over it, you know. And I think it's a great decision on his part not to go back to Scotland. You know, I think it's a great move to go to Copenhagen. I think he's made for that climate. You know, he'll have his short sleeves on and it'll be like snowing. And that is just a great image. Thank you, Scott McKenna.
In terms of, I've put also runs, which is a bit mean, but Ethan Horvath to Cardiff, John Panzo to Standard Liège, Alex Mighton to Port Vale, Brandon Aguilera to Bristol Rovers was an interesting one. Nick, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's slightly surprising. I suppose Rayner coming in kind of will, in theory, double up any potential minutes that Aguilera might have got. It's a little bit surprising that he hasn't been out on loan before. I don't think he was he on loan last season? I can't remember. I think he was just kind of hanging around for most of last season, wasn't he? But yeah, young player, shows some promise, needs to be booted up in the air a few times to toughen him up, make the boy a man kind of thing. Makes a certain amount of sense. I suppose it is slightly surprising in that he has been in the first team a little bit recently, but that was kind of through necessity rather than any kind of design. So it's probably good for him to go and get some time somewhere else.
Yeah, poor of you to forget his memorable 2022-23 loan spell at Juana Sotesta. Which I think went pretty well for him, and he did play in the World Cup as well. But yeah, good luck to him. All right, well, that was a relatively quiet January transfer window for Forest. Then next today, we're going to reflect on the Arsenal game. So Arsenal very rudely turned up at the World Famous without reading the script. They're supposed to lose away to Forest, but instead they thrashed us 2-1. Our friend David Marples, like me, was at the City Ground on Tuesday night, and he sent us this audio dispatch.
Did you hear that, my friends? That was the sound of disappointed footsteps pounding a disappointing cold Nottingham pavement. Got off to a disappointing start, really. Had some deeply disappointing chips before the game. They were far too chunky. And the condiments were Daddy's brown sauce. Not even from a squeezy jar, but from a sachet. I mean, that's not really promising a lot for an evening. Still, brief glimmer of hope. Two Ellison's coaches on Trent Bridge. Almost like seeing a double rainbow. Game started, and we'd seen this game a million times before. Well, maybe not a million, but a few anyway. The opposition came, they had possession, we gave that up. And we tried to hit them on the break, and very occasionally you thought this might work. But eventually Arsenal figured out that, actually, if we just play a bit deeper and let Rice have the ball, that'll create a bit of space, and then we can sort of prize them open, which they did, and fair play. That's pretty much what happened. Yates came on, Montiel lost the ability to kick a ball, and that meant 2-0, and the jig was pretty much up. This slow burner of a party was grinding to a bit of a sudden halt. But Taiwo, there's always Taiwo. Arsenal, the team with the Taiwo-sized thorn in its side. Light flickered very, very briefly. But I guess, given the performance, the nature of the performance, such performance as stand or fall by result, it's in some ways difficult to read too much into it. We did pretty well off the ball for long periods, but we only actually played any football for about the length of a Ramones or a Lemonhead song. It seems that we could be lapsing, or we might be lapsing into a pattern of did all right, some promising moments, but got nothing. Still, if you've got Taiwo and Elanga and Gibbs White on the pitch, that is enough to warm the cockles of even my cold, cold heart.
Many thanks to David there. Arsha, two individual errors cost Forest, but it would be incorrect to pretend that we deserved anything from this game, would it not?
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin struck again. And then World Cup winning penalty scorer guy, trademark, because that's how you have to introduce him every single time, don't you? Made a complete mess of a simple moment in a game. Look, for 60 minutes, 60-odd minutes, we were all right, I thought. You know, very defensive, but I've kind of come to sort of grudgingly accept that because we're not really... We can't really set up in any other way, really. We're not established enough. We don't have the kind of team. We don't have the kind of underpinning kind of philosophy or overreaching philosophy as a club. You know, we're not really standing for anything. So I can kind of see, like, yeah, you know, with this kind of random collection of players that we've got, you know, of course we're going to set up defensively. So I'm kind of comfortable with that at the moment. You know, it's not great to watch, but I thought as soon as Taiwo came on, at half time, which was really surprising. I was kind of like, whoa, you know, he's going to get a whole 45 minutes. Like, great. You know, and you see just in that first 10 minutes he was on, you can see what a difference he makes. Like, he is a nuisance. So when he did come on, you know, the game kind of opened up a little bit, I thought. And that's, you know, where it sort of went a bit wrong. We are that team. We're always going to be that team, it seems, until there's something underpinning all of this. We are going to be that team that sort of sits back. It just depends on how we see you in terms of, if you're a top six team and you come to the City Ground, we'll sit back deeper. If you're not, then we might sort of, you know, climb up a few yards or whatever. But that's what we are. We sit back, we hit you on the counter with pace. So it was good to see Elanga back as well. But yeah, insert any other manager here. You know, I know, because we talked about, like, is sort of the new manager bounce gone? I don't think it has, really. I just think it's kind of, it doesn't matter who's in charge at this point in a way. You know, I think that Arsenal game would have probably have gone that way, you know, with the amount of players that are out and, you know, the sort of holes that are being filled. You know, Dominguez on, you know, sort of, he's been playing sort of right wing, you know, and all these kind of things, which I guess, like, Mangala going will hopefully bring Dominguez back to a sort of more natural kind of central role. But yeah, we were all right for 55 odd minutes, and then calamity struck, as it so often does.
So that resulted, Nick, in a fifth defeat at the City Ground this season in the league. One thing that I've noticed, and I've been to most of the home games this season, seven, is that the atmosphere is not what it was for the last couple of years. Do you think that's just inevitable when people get kind of Premier League fatigue and, you know, used to Forest doing relatively well? Is it because of a lack of identity with the players? Is it because Steve Cooper's not there anymore? Do you have a theory as to why it's not as raucous as it once was?
I think it's, you know, a combination of all of the above, really. I mean, it's, I think it's inevitable that if you're, a team is not in the Premier League for 23 years, the first season is always going to be the most sort of celebrated and raucous, and that's when the enthusiasm is going to be the highest. And it's not to say that people aren't enthusiastic now, but I think it's kind of inevitable that there is slightly less. It's not there's necessarily less jeopardy, but there's maybe mildly less jeopardy, but also less novelty. So, you know, I mean, you know, you will have been at the games more than I will, so you're kind of more qualified to talk about how different the atmosphere is. I mean, has it sort of depended on the type of game? Has it, you know, was it not as great for, I don't know, Brentford or whatever than it was for Arsenal? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's it, because you'd think that Arsenal would be the type of game where it would be raucous, particularly pre-match, and it just wasn't here. I wonder, Asher, if maybe it's become a bit more transactional now that Cooper's not there. I think certainly in the back of my mind on Tuesday was, I don't feel as connected to this team and these players. This ticket's cost me £48. Come and give me some entertainment and then I might back you, which is not the way that you should think, but it does happen when, you know, you feel we're still sort of grieving Steve Cooper not being there a little bit, many of us.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. But just to go back to what Nick said, I would argue that there's more jeopardy this time around. And that is what is making everyone so tense. It feels tense. I've been to quite a few games. Just the whole thing, the whole package, it doesn't feel unmissable anymore. Like, I spent a lot of the first season back, you know, really just wishing I could be there. And it doesn't feel like that anymore. And obviously, yeah, you know, second season, that's going to happen because it's not new anymore. And sort of maybe a sense of kind of entitlement kind of comes in a little bit. But I think it really is, it feels like people don't want to lose this. You know, they don't want to go down again. We don't want to go, you know, into the Championship again. So there is a sort of weird tension, you know, and like you say now, there's been another churn. It's a churn of players. It's, you know, coaching staff, you know, new manager, all that kind of stuff, which obviously, you know, you have a disconnect. We're not quite in there with Nuno yet at all. You know, yes, we kind of like sort of feel mildly comfortable with him there, but there's no connection. And in the ground as well, I don't know, it just feels, yeah, it just doesn't, the whole thing just doesn't feel unmissable. And that's kind of sad. And like you say, you know, especially with the way we've played Arsenal recently at the City Ground over the last few years, I did sort of think, you know, and I was sort of expecting more from the crowd. But yeah, I think it's just a weird kind of tension. We don't want to get relegated with this band of misfits.
Next three home league games, Nick, are Newcastle, West Ham and Liverpool. A, you'd think that they're games that could engender a positive atmosphere. Nobody likes West Ham, and Newcastle and Liverpool are obviously very well supported and big games. Forest are going to need to win at least one of those, aren't they?
Yeah, it's troubling that Newcastle seem to have sorted themselves out a little bit recently. Liverpool, obviously, not only a brilliant team, but powered by the spirit of doing it for Jurgen kind of thing.
Jurgen Klopp leaving Liverpool, is he?
I know. You would have thought there would have been more coverage, wouldn't you? But, you know. And yeah, West Ham, I had no idea about West Ham. They, if anyone can come to me and give me a confident opinion one way or the other, where West Ham are actually good. I mean, I know they're seventh in the table, something like that, which is ostensibly for West Ham pretty good. But I don't know. I can't make my mind up about them at all. No idea whether they're any good or not. So you would have thought that logically, they of those three, that's the most likely place that we're going to get a win. But the thing about Forest this season, and to sort of vaguely counterbalance that thing of that we've lost a few games at home now, is that we have come up with some kind of unexpected results, whether through accident or design, you know, beating Chelsea away, beating Newcastle away, to a point beating United at home. There seems to be a little bit more, like, I don't know, potential to pull something like that out of the bag. So I think we will win at least one of those games. I just couldn't confidently tell you which one it's likely to be.
I'll say West Ham. If you were at the City Ground on Tuesday, you might have been surprised as I was to see Robert Pirès wheeled out among other stars onto the pitch at halftime. This was to promote an event that Forest, the Weatherhead Centre at Harvard University, and the Lilian Thuram Foundation put on at the City Ground this week, aimed at tackling the issues of racism and gender inequality in European football. Thierry Henry, Thuram himself, Viv Anderson, Anthony Elanga, among the people who've signed a pledge committing themselves to publicly push for racial equality in football. Nick, we've not exactly been glowing in our praise for the ownership and hierarchy at the club, but it's good to see them putting on something like this. It's obviously not something that they're obliged to do, so good work.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they're not just kind of big names, but like thoughtful people as well. Lilian Thuram is very smart guy who speaks intelligently on these issues. Great to see Wes Morgan back at the City Ground as well. You know, always if Wes is happy, I'm happy. So great to see him back. And I mean, one thing that, as you say, amongst all the kind of negativity and the whinging we have about Forest is that Nuno is Forest's third manager of colour in the last, what's five, six seasons? Sabli Mucci, Chris Hughton, and now Nuno. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other Premier League clubs that can say that. So, you know, I'm sure it wasn't a that that wasn't the kind of criteria as to why those managers were hired. But in an industry where black managers are so kind of horrendously underrepresented, to have that at Forest, I think, is something to be quite proud of.
Yeah, and it kind of chimes with Nottingham as a city, right, Arsha? It is a very ethnically diverse and generally quite tolerant place. So it's not as if we're having to do this to say, stop doing racisms at the City Ground and that kind of thing.
No, I don't think so. I mean, like for me, my experience growing up in Nottingham was amazing. You know, I places I've experienced racism have been outside of Nottingham and in places that you would think would know better. London, I'm looking at you. You know, I mean, anyway, that's a whole separate issue, and I'm not entirely sure how you can solve it. But good on them, you know, like we say, like, you know, a lot of our kind of whinging, the kind of sort of impatient, you know, ambition of our owners, yeah, aside, you know, they are quite altruistic. They are people who will go out and help communities. You know, you've seen it at Olympiakos, you know, you see it here. So this is sort of another in that kind of line of things, and long may it continue, because also just on a really cynical level, we could do with the good PR. We really could.
All right, well, well done to Forest for putting that on. We're going to have a look ahead to Bournemouth shortly. But as I mentioned, a couple of ways you can support our podcast. As I said earlier, you can give us a nice review and a five-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend. You can follow us on Twitter, now known as X, at the Garibaldi G, or you can help out our charity partners if you are able to. The first of which are Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. All right, next we're going to look ahead to Sunday's trip to the seaside. Says here, sunny intervals with a moderate breeze in Bournemouth on Sunday. So hopefully that'll mean the home side can't call the game off at short notice. Forest at the venue formerly known as Dean Court, a 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday afternoon. Nick, I was quite staggered to look at the table and see that Bournemouth have only got 6 more points than Forest. I thought they were like the hot thing that were flying up the table. Does that mean that we can go there with hope of getting something from this match? Because I'd already written it off in my head.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily use that as a huge amount of hope, because I think that just emphasises how bad they were in the first like 8 or 9 games of the season. So they have been one of the best teams in the division for the last few months, but they had to play catch up from what was a pretty disastrous up until, I don't know, when did they start winning? October time? I can't remember. But they looked horrendous for the first few games, and something clicked at some point. I mean, it's quite sort of startling how sudden that was, that it all just seemed to click and Dominic Solanke started scoring goals and they started to play the kind of football that, you know, people who know much more about Antonio Areola promised that they would do. So I'm not going to necessarily use the league table as a sort of any kind of reassurance that Forest are going to get anything. But yeah, it's a sign at least that things can change.
Forest have got 2 days extra rest on Bournemouth. They drew 1-1 at West Ham on Thursday night. Really interesting selection dilemmas for Nuno here, I think, Archer. I think we can probably assume that Matt Sells is going to start in goal. Elsewhere, though, are you bringing Taiwo and Elanga back into the team from the off here after their promising returns in midweek?
I think so, if they can handle it. It's quite harsh on Chris Wood, though, who has, you know, completely stepped up in his absence. But we just look better with those two in the team. And if we're gonna sit back and counter, which we're probably going to do, I think we need those two. But, you know, hey, it's Bournemouth. Bournemouth, bloody Bournemouth. I hate that I'm a bit jealous of them and what they're doing at the moment, you know, and Areola in charge. And, you know, it's sort of panned out. Like, I really wanted them to flop. Like, I really was like, you don't deserve him. You know, and then at the beginning, that was sort of panning, you know, sort of going that way. And then, like Nick says, something just changed and they look really good. And, you know, again, not to bang on about this every week, but their recruitment is interesting. It's like so interesting. Some of the players they bring in and the kind of thought behind it and just the general kind of cocksure kind of, we know what we are kind of vibe, which I think every Premier League club needs to give off, and which is why Forest are just so painfully insecure. And, you know, and it sort of, that kind of bears out in the transfer market and whatever. But I would definitely stick those two in. The home form, their home form is the only thing that's sort of given me like the smallest glimmer of hope. But hey, we're Nottingham Forest, you know, and I'm sure we can help them with that. We can help them improve their home form. Sorry, so negative.
Okay, well, I'm going to come in with some good news. Kiefer Moore cannot hurt us anymore. Kiefer Moore has gone on loan to Ipswich, so he wouldn't have started this game anyway, but he was always going to be there, wasn't he? Like a kind of, you know, looming presence, like kind of Godzilla emerging from the water. So he's out of the way. They can hurt us in many, many other ways, but at least Kiefer Moore is not there anymore.
Yeah, Kiefer Moore can gain new fans.
Yeah.
Championship, yeah. Hate him.
Just to underline what Arsha was saying there, they've only won 4 of their 10 home league games, have been beaten 5 times already. Nick, Moussa Niakate and Cheick Kouyaté back from AFCON now. Wonder if we'll see one or both of them. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Andrew Omabamadeli, because he's come from absolutely nowhere to become a stick-on in the team. Is he going to keep his place, or does Niakate come straight back in for him?
I think Niakate will come back in, or I would put Niakate back in anyway. And then that isn't a kind of comment on Omabamadeli's form. Christ alive, sorry. But it is extraordinary how he's obviously, you know, he's a young centre-back. He's a bit of a work in progress. He's not perfect, but it's incredible how good he has been, given that he not even really been in the squad for I don't think at all until the Blackpool game. Blackpool replay, was it? Was it that? I can't remember.
I think he was on the bench for the first game against Blackpool.
Yeah, that was it. The first game against Blackpool, I remember commenting that it was odd at the time, it felt like he might have gone out on loan, and if he had, then, or if he, you know, once he played for Forest, having already played for Norwich this season, he wouldn't have been able to go out on loan to anyone else. So I remember thinking that was odd at the time, but yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say that Forest have conceded goals in all of the games that he's played, but he's looked much better than he had any right to, which is not to say that Nyakate, a much, I think, much more accomplished, much more experienced and senior player, shouldn't come straight back in, particularly when, you know, we're playing against what, possibly the form, the most informed striker in the division at the moment, Solanke. So you're never quite sure whether what psychological effect the way that things ended for Nyakate at AFCON, if people didn't see it, he missed a penalty in the penalty shootout, which saw Senegal go out. So who knows how whether that will have any kind of psychological effects on him, but I would put him straight back in the team.
Yeah, he absolutely would, even just on a balanced kind of side, you know, he's left-footed, get him back in.
Yeah, and players generally, if they've messed up in their last game, they just want to play another one straight away, don't they? So we shall see whether Nyakate makes the cut. 2 o'clock kickoff at the venue formerly known as Dean Court. We'll reflect on it in next week's pod. All right, and finally, inspired by the viral tweet, dudes can literally just sit around and name old sports players and just have the best time. I thought we could run through some of the best named Forest players in ever. Now, this is not us laughing at funny foreign sounding names. It's just names that we enjoy saying. Like, if it wasn't Forest, you'd say Esteban Cambiaso. It's always been the big one for me. Try and say that and not enjoy it. Ange Postecoglou, ditto. Nick, you and I have spent far too long working on this, given that you have actual jobs and lives and stuff, but it's going to bear fruit now. Give me some of your best ones, please.
Oh, yes. Right. Well, in terms of the names that are nice to say, Dele Adebola, I always enjoyed saying Dele. That's good. Really good. And yes, as you say, I've done a huge amount of research, more than I did for my exams, I think. A few select ones from Forest's history. We have Billy Cobb, who disappointingly was not there at the same time as George Crisp, which would have been very nice. Frank Drabble, which is good, not a member of Police Squad, unfortunately. Dick LeFleu, was a winger in the 1960s. Leonard Boot, goalkeeper in the 1920s. Sailor Brown, which I enjoyed. His real name was Robert, but he got his nickname early on in his life. He served in World War II in, of course, the Royal Air Force. Yes, that's right. according to no less a source than Wikipedia, he got the nickname Sailor because of a rolling gait and muscular, stocky build. What else have I got here? I've got loads. Harry Daft, from Radcliffe, his career path, which I enjoyed, read Notts County, Forest, Newark, Corinthian, Notts County, Corinthian, Notts County, Nottingham Forest, Notts County, and then Newark again. He also played 5 times for England and was a first-class cricketer for Notts. Who else have I got? Frank Shufflebottom. I'm taking them all here. Finally, an old favourite, Einar Aas, who was a defender, I think, in the early 80s. And there was always this thing, this kind of, because Forrest had a player called Lee Smelt around at that time. So there was always the joke that the Forrest could play a defence of Anderson Smelt Burns' arse, which unfortunately, and I have looked this up, is apocryphal because those players never played together.
Oh, well, let's pretend they did. That was an exhaustive list, and yet you haven't got anybody who I've got on mine.
Wow.
Asher, I'm going to tick off the ones that you and I have got the same as you read yours out. I'm expecting there to be a few, but hit me with some, please.
I've got names that I just like saying. Mm. That's what I've gone for. So I've gone for Andy Impey.
Yeah.
That's just nice. Andy Impey, little imp.
Subject, of course, of one of the great chants, Andy Impey's got no neck, poor old Andy.
Nice, to the point.
Yeah.
Jean-Claude Darcheville. That's just a great Jean-Claude Darcheville. That's in the same arena as like David Frio.
Yeah.
No, and Guy Moussy. Maybe it's just all these French players. Guy Moussy, you know? But then what about like Gino Padula?
Yeah, that was very satisfying
Gino
to say.
Padula, just that random Argentinian guy that we had. Kingsley Black, I like that.
That's the first one that's also on my list.
Kingsley that's a Black. Cool name, Kingsley Black, right? Franz Carr. That's another one. That's very another cool. Enjoyable one. And I'll let you go on with the rest.
Okay. Well, I've just put Andrew on my Bamadelli as we were talking about him. It's difficult, but it's enjoyable. I've got Hans van Brooklyn, of course. Eugen Bopp, always a big favourite for me. Johnny Method, Eugene Daddy, Junior Agogo, Brees Samba, Brian Cash, Tubar Akbom, Archie Gemmell, Felix Bastion, Stern John, Grenville Morris, Mustafa Karail, Apostolos Velios, Horace Pike, Radoslav Majewski, Sammy Amiobi, and Enoch West. Sammy Amiobi is just, you could say that over and over and over again, couldn't you?
I think that's the clear winner here. Sammy Amiobi, you've won.
Also, kind of vaguely in that category is Andreas Bouchalakis, one of the Greek players who, of course, was known by some people as the Mighty Bush.
Good. You sort of want to have Rafik Jabor on there, but then it just makes you think, oh, God, remember that time when we had the likes of him knocking around?
What about Panayotis Taxidis?
Yeah.
Good.
That random guy.
Yeah. Odysseus would be good, but none of us have been able to properly get his name right. So
it's Odysseus Flakadimos. Okay. That's from him. I'm pretty sure that's straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Flakadimos and Pliers, as a colleague of mine insists on calling him every time he's mentioned. Okay, Sammy Amiobi for the win. Stern John will always have a place in my heart because I just picture a very cross man called John whenever I say it. There we go. Maybe we missed some, listener. Let us know at the Garibaldi G on Twitter, now known as X. There must be some great ones that we have missed, so please do get in touch. That is a good way to help us out. I mentioned it before, but if you leave us a nice review on your favoured podcast platform of choice, that is a great way for other Forest fans to find the show. It is free. It'll only take you a second, so we would appreciate it. And we are grateful to everybody who has done so and spread the word of this pod. We'll be back with another show in our regular time slot next week because there's no transfer deadline to worry about. But that's going to do it for today. So my thanks go to Arsha, to Nick, to producer Lucy, but mainly to you for listening. Back with you again soon. Enjoy your weekend. Bye for now.